Good afternoon and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Inner West Local Planning Panel this afternoon. We've got a number of items on the agenda, so I look forward to your support in dealing with those matters. The Local Planning Panel is charged with the responsibility of determining matters that are under $30 million, otherwise identified as controversial, and have others that might be in excess of 10% variation or 4.6 being the required document for development standards. Those members in the gallery, could I ask you to put yourself on mute until you're speaking? And that'll give everyone a good opportunity to hear what's happening. I would like to acknowledge the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation, on whose country we are meeting today, and elders past and present. We have one declaration this afternoon, and that's a perceived interest on item two by one of our panelists, and we'll mention that when we get to it. Can I say that all panelists have availed themselves of a site inspection? We've had the benefit of a detailed briefing from the council officers, and of course we've had the benefit of very detailed reports which persons in the gallery would have also had the opportunity to consider. Can I ask that each of you, when you address today, that you endeavour to limit your presentation to 3 minutes? I know I haven't got to ask you to be respectful, because I know you all will. And we'll move forward each of the submissions and then make the determinations after we've heard everyone's comment. I'd like to introduce the panelists to you today that will be determining the matters. Firstly, I'm the chair for this afternoon. My name is Gary Shields. I've been a planner for a number of years, both with council and also as a consultant. I also had a short time in the Land and Environment Court as an acting commissioner. And I serve on a number of planning panels currently. My qualifications include master's degrees in planning and a PhD in planning. Can I ask Brian Kirk if he'd introduce himself? Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. My name's Brian Kirk. I am a planning consultant. I have postgraduate qualifications in planning and land economics. I've held senior positions in local government and state government. And I continue to work on a contract basis with both of those organisations. And I've been an expert witness in the Land Environment Court over many times over the last 40 years. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Vanessa.
Hi, my name is Vanessa Holtham. I'm a registered architect. I've got a background in planning and heritage, and I currently sit on the Heritage Council of New South Wales.
Thank you, Vanessa. And Sylvia, can you unmute and introduce yourself? Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Crayer. I'm your community representative on today's panel. I also have a background in planning and currently work in design excellence for the City of Sydney Council. As your community representative, I have very detailed knowledge of the LGA, having lived in the Inner West Council area for most of my life.
Thank you. I do propose to hear from each of the both objectors and applicants' representative, and it will be the objectors first, followed by the applicant's representative second. Item one, I have Dr. Joseph McGree. Are you there, sir? Is Dr. McGree there?
He's on mute, I think.
How do I turn it off?
Yeah, sorry, there. Can you hear me?
I can now, sir. Could you please address? That. No, that's quite all right. Please address the panel.
I'm the owner of 95 Louisa Road, and I am strongly of the view that this modification that's been put forward must be rejected, and for several reasons, or there are a number of reasons, but in specifically, this has been dealt with by the council in 2020, being the window and the lift overrun, the Land and Environment Court in 2022, and importantly, it was dealt with the Inner West Planning Panel in June of 2023, in June. Now, I'm not sure why we keep revisiting the same things when the modifications have not changed. The only change that's been made on the modification is to remove the copper cladding. The copper cladding is actually unauthorised works, so it doesn't make any sense in that respect to have that. The important reasons for window 18 to be excluded, as unanimously determined by the council in its recent submission and also the Inner West Planning Panel in June 2000 with privacy reasons. We need to keep in mind that this is a very, very large window and it has views into my living space. The house, the window is effectively about a metre from my balcony living space. So it actually has views into my living space. So it's very, very important that from my point of view, that the privacy aspects as determined by the council as well as the Inner West Planning Panel in June of last year be adhered to. I think it would set a dangerous policy if this was overturned, and it would set a dangerous precedent. The other thing to keep in mind is that this window is not being used for natural light. It's importantly being used to grab additional views, which in itself is quite worrying, particularly when my privacies and my family's privacy is being impacted. And importantly, and I think this is critical as well, there are no properties, no windows on Louisa Road, no windows at all that look directly into the living space of another neighbour. And there are also fire safety compliance issues. And I've just recently had a DA approved for my house, and I was rejected on opaque glass bricks that looked into a basement area across a stair. So this was completely rejected, and I removed these opaque glass bricks. Now, with regards to the lift overrun, this was refused by the council in 2020. It was refused by the Land and Environment Court in 2022, and it was refused by the Inner West Planning Panel in 2023. So the point that I'm trying to make is that these matters have been dealt with, you know, and I'm not sure why the applicant is so resistant to dealing with the lift overrun and also the privacy issues of the owners. The other thing too is that
my apologies, I've accidentally, Dr. Macri, I've accidentally muted you. My apologies.
Could you wind up, Dr. Macri?
Yes. And importantly, you know, the hydraulic lifts have not been looked at. The, you know, 99 and 99A were refused a DA because they were not permitted to have a lift overrun like 93. They were forced to put in a hydraulic lift. Now, the hydraulic lift is a possibility of this. And also, it's not necessarily the case that you actually have to have a lift that goes to level 5, you know. So it's quite important. And the other thing, too, is that, you know, the applicant continued work when there was a stop work order by the council when he continued to build this lift overrun. And also, there are also policies by the council that the applicant has breached. So in summary, I'll just make this final point. In summary, you look at the application, there's been no material changes in circumstances at all that warrant any reversal of this decision. It's been dealt with, it's beyond me why we keep revisiting the same things.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, good.
Could I hear from Dr. Henry Chung? Are you there, sir?
Yes, Chairperson, I'm Henry Chung.
Thank you.
So
Need to repeat anything the previous speaker said. If you can agree with his commentary to the extent that you would like to. Thank you.
Yeah, so I'm adjacent neighbor. I'm adjacent neighbor at 91 Louisa Row, and I agree with Dr. Macri in objecting the application. And I think the panel should unequivocally refuse the application. The merit issues with the lift overrun and window have been addressed both qualitatively, quantitatively, heritage-related in previous council reports and upheld by the Land Environmental Court. The application failed to address these issues, despite last year they applied to lower the lift overrun, which was approved. Approval of this application in its current state of non-compliance effectively is reinstating the non-compliance, and it undermines the integrity of the planning process. There is no justification for reinstating the lift overrun, which is non-compliant. The planning panel requested a nearby property at 9991A to reduce their lift overrun by 630 millimetres so that the roof along Louisa Row and Snell's Face is not dominated by lift overruns. And as Dr. Macri mentioned, there are viable alternatives of hydraulic lifts, stair lifts, and all these have been successfully utilised by neighbouring properties all along Louisa Road without having the use of an excessive overrun. Moreover, there is no Building Code of Australia requirement mandating a lift for safety reasons to access a roof terrace that has no habitable space. Approving of this modification application would not only contradict previous panel decisions requiring nearby developments to reduce lift overruns, but also sets a dangerous and harmful precedent for future developments. Such a decision will undermine the consistency, fairness, and credibility of the planning process, eroding the public's trust. Therefore, to uphold the principles of sound and lawful development, I strongly urge the panel to refuse this application. The integrity of the planning process and public confidence of our planning system really depends on it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The last speaker I have on this item is on behalf of the applicant, and it's Mr. Peter Tomasetti, SC. Mr. Tomasetti, are you there, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on the 2nd of April, my client lodged with the council some alterations to the plans, the subject of the modification. Those plans resulted from me being briefed to advise, to assist. And on the 3rd of April, Mr. Cave of the council responded to say that he wouldn't accept those amendments. So there's an initial issue here. His report to the panel does not deal with these amendments which we've made, which reduces the height of the overrun and which installs fixed blades to the window 18. And it's really quite pointless for me to be addressing the panel unless the panel can see the significant impact of these amendments that have been proposed. I'm just wanting to know from you, Mr. Chairman, in the first instance, whether or not you've been briefed with the documents that were given to the council on the 2nd of April.
We have what's before the panel as presented to us, Mr. Tomasetti, and that's what we've dealt with.
Does that include the documents given to you on the 2nd of April?
I can't confirm that. I'll just check with...
There's a suite of architectural drawings from Urbane. There's a heritage document from Weir Phillips. And there's a amended statement of environmental effects. And my understanding is that none of these documents have been given to you. And it's very important that you see them because they effectively resolve, in my submission, these issues, respecting the views of particularly Dr. Macri. It's impossible to see through this window back to his balcony, whilst the window does serve to give light and views to the subject property. And so far as the lift overrun is concerned, It's now been reduced by 150 millimetres. The ridge height has been increased subtly so that the lift overrun does not exceed the ridge height of the roof.
Mr. Tomasetti, have you read the report? That's a rhetorical question.
I have studied the report, and I do.
And have you seen the drawings that the report was based on? That
yes, they don't address the amended application.
So that answers your question, which was rhetorical as well. The panel is dealing with the information that's before us that would appear prima facie not to include the material you're referring to.
Well, I'm asking the panel to defer this matter and to ask Mr. Cave to report upon the plans which have been prepared with a significant expense and consideration of neighbours, with a view to resolving this matter and avoiding further litigation. And Mr. Cave has not provided any substantive reason as to why he hasn't considered these amendments back in April. And I think it's extremely unfortunate for council and for the community to have continuing uncertainty when there seems to have been no justifiable reason not to accept these documents.
I can't respond to that, Mr. Tomasetti, as you might appreciate. I can only deal what's before me. Before me now. Do you want to make a submission to the panel that the matter be deferred?
Yes.
Or do you want to finish speaking as you were before?
No, I feel that I'm asking the panel to defer consideration of the matter, to ask Mr. Cave to address the amendments that we made to the modification application on the 3rd of April, 2nd of April, and that the panel reconvene having considered these amendments, which, if you were shown them, would clearly demonstrate that the council's concerns and the neighbours' concerns are addressed.
Thank you, Mr. Tomasetti. We'll give consideration to your commentary and indeed your request at the conclusion of the public side of our meeting. Thank you.
Sorry, of course, Mr. Could I make a point?
No, you can't, sir. I'm sorry. But I think you've had an ample opportunity to present your case. I'm moving on to item two. And thank you for those presenters. And item one, we'll consider what's been said by everyone when we deliberate on that matter. Item two, I've got John Neaton. Are you there, sir?
Am I excused then?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, John Neaton, NEYLON.
NEYLON. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Would you please present to the panel?
Absolutely. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chair, and to the panel. As way of introduction, I'm the owner of 13 Moore Street, Leichhardt. I was born in that house. I grew up on that street. My auntie and grandfather lived next door. My sister and now her daughter lived on the other side. So this property, this area is dear to my heart and dear to my community and my family. The proposal to develop the rear of the lane, I'm most in favour of. What I do object to is the proposal for four balconies on 46 Ilka Street due to a number of community concerns. The first one is the privacy matter. Given that there are four existing houses, even though the zoning industrial, it was originally light industrial, then it's light industrial. The reality is there are still houses occupied by people living there. Each of these houses have the rear of their properties facing onto the proposed site, of which privacy of four balconies overlooking at such a height would severely impose on the existing amenities that are enjoyed and have been enjoyed for many years in these properties. The second one is on that basis, from privacy, also the noise, the potential for noise disturbance of balconies. The design of the proposed balconies are obviously very minute balconies. So I'm objecting to the design primarily. What I'm not objecting to is some form of light ingress. If there were to be high windows, for example, that wouldn't impose somebody standing in front of a view, that would be quite acceptable. Very similar to the development that's happened directly behind my house at 13 Moore Street. It's not as if I'm objecting to the building itself, but simply to the balconies, four balconies in such a small space. I note that in the development proposal, there is screening on the other side facing the other residents. Well, why isn't there screening facing the residents in Moore Street? So there's obviously more residents there to be concerned about. In addition, as I said, I'm very concerned about the community area. It's aesthetically not acceptable to have four balconies there. No other property in that section have got balconies facing onto other properties. That's one aspect. The second aspect I'm objecting to, and I've written to you in my letter, is the fact of the parking. Obviously, Moore Lane, I believe you've all been there, or most of the panel. Moore Lane is a dead-end street. The parking facilities are already stretched to the absolute maximum, and the capacity for vehicles to adequately park on Moore Lane with this additional proposal, which I'm not objecting to the buildings, but I'm just warning that there'll be more people visiting Moore Lane with this proposal. We need parking spaces to be preserved.
Excuse me, Chair, that is 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Chair. Thank you.
Parking and balconies that I'm objecting to.
Thank you, sir. Is this your wife, Amy?
And my niece.
Your niece. Does your niece want to address this as well?
Yes, I'm the owner-occupier of 11A Moore Street.
Okay. Would you mind not repeating anything that's been previously said? And just
I'll be succinct.
Thank you.
So thank you for taking the time to listen to our concerns regarding this new development. My concerns for the development do include the balconies, of course, the privacy concerns. It looks directly into my bedroom, so I am concerned that it'll look into my backyard, which I'm very lucky to have, and it's going to affect my quiet enjoyment. I also would like to reference the Leichhardt DCP 2013 urban character document in the Pipperston area on Moore Lane. It says to maintain the predominant service and access to the rear lanes, so with the construction and the development block access, because it's a very busy area with all the businesses, it is industrial. It says to maintain the prevalence of street trees in addition to mature and visibly significant trees on private land. There are removal of trees proposed. And also I saw, with the exception of the White's Creek Lane, that development of dwellings fronting onto the laneway shall be discouraged. So this development does, it will be the front onto the laneway, which says that it should be discouraged. So not sure about that. And then from the Ilka Street sub area, it says that it wants to conserve the vegetative corridor. I believe that the trees proposed to be removed will not conserve the vegetable corridor, which I quite enjoy as a resident. I look out into my backyard. If those trees aren't there, it's a green council. That would be quite disappointing. And the same thing, yeah. But these clearly outlined in your council's urban character documents, I believe this DA is not following the Inner West Council's guidelines, and I object to this development. As an active community member, I hope to live and enjoy this area for many, many years to come. Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker I have is Heidi Thorne. Are you there, Heidi?
Yes, I am. I'm Heidi Thorne. I live and occupy 11 Moore Street, Leichhardt, next to Amy. I absolutely thank both Amy and John. Everything that they've said, I echo. It is actually directly behind my location with my husband and two young kids. The amenity, the balconies, the privacy is what I object to. There must be a compromise. The area is zoned light industrial, but it is deemed residential use. We've been in that house for 15 years, and I would hate to think that we're now looking onto a balcony and a unit. That's all I have to say. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. We've got a town planner speaking on behalf of the applicant, and that's Crystal Naby. Are you there?
Hi, yes, I'm Crystal.
from Gatton Associates.
Hi, Crystal. Just identify yourself and present to the panel if you'd be so kind. Say
Hi,
your name.
My name's Crystal.
You don't have to wave, yeah. Just say your name. Thank you.
Crystal from Gatton Associates.
Thank you.
Town planner. I'm mostly here in support of the development application. Would you like me to address what the objectors have just raised?
That would be helpful for the panel. Thank you.
Okay. With respect to privacy, I just want to clarify that there are no balconies that are facing towards Moore Lane. They are floor-to-ceiling windows with an awning above, so they're not actually a trafficable area. If that's a concern of the panel, we can look into a design solution such as obscure glazing or such, but we do have the benefit of a 3-metre front setback as well as the laneway itself separating us from the industrial slash residential sites that are across the laneway. With respect to parking, we're not actually changing the existing site circumstance. Both 43 and 45 Ilka Street have vehicle crossings to the rear, and the proposed new dwelling does result in two parking spaces, so there's no change to parking in the laneway. What's the last point? Just with respect to the erection of a new dwelling in the laneway, the property is subject to the controls that are under the relevant sub area, so we are fitting into the existing character of new development that is in Moore Lane.
Thank you. Does the panel have any questions of any of the speakers? If not, I'll move on to the next item. Sorry, the next speaker is also from Sega Design. And that's Anshul Gaunt. Are you there, sir?
Hi, yes, I am.
Sorry, madam.
No, unusual name, don't worry.
Thank you.
So I'm the architect for this site. So I guess I just echo what Crystal said in regards to clarifying that there are no balconies. I think that might have been a previous design for a pre-DA meeting, so that those balconies have since been deleted. But generally, we were happy with council's recommendation and report for this site. So, yeah, we had no changes to any of the conditions suggested.
And you can confirm the four balconies that the objector was concerned about have been deleted.
Correct. They've been deleted, so they're just windows as they're not trafficable.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm moving on then to the next item, which I have on my list, which is item 3.
Sorry, Chair.
Yes.
Sorry, I did have a question for the architect. On that item in relation to what was proposed through the front fencing on Ilka Street. If I may.
Yep. Yes, please. Thank you.
So the elevation plans show that there are two new gates adjoining each other, one for 43 and one for 41, to provide that right of way. Can you clarify
what's
actually proposed? I'm looking at proposed north elevation, sheet DA18A.
Yes.
And it's showing the existing front fence for 41 Ilka Street and what looks like a pier that would be retained. But when you actually compare what's on site with the width of the gate, that doesn't look possible. So what are you proposing once you put the gate in, read the fence? Is it just retain what you can? Maybe just if you could.
Yes, let me just clarify the photo. We would just have to cut back the brick fence as far. Actually, I know what the misclarification is. When you look at a photo of the site, I believe the wall that I'm proposing to demolish actually overlaps the boundary. So from my calculations, that brick pier that would be retained is actually where the brick pier currently is. So I actually don't think we would be amending the neighbour's brick fence at all. But I guess the intention would just be that, you know, an 800 or 900 wide gate be put in at that point. I believe council asked for it to be a sliding gate, which is fine. But yeah, just something that was the same width as the stair that was getting constructed and make good the rest of the brick fencing.
So, sorry, are you saying that you think that pier wouldn't need to be demolished?
I don't think so, because I think on 43 Ilka Street, our masonry wall actually crosses over the boundary into 41 Ilka Street. So I think it's only that wall, the rendered wall, that is getting demolished rather than the pier that you're talking about. I think that pier actually could remain.
Okay. All right.
If it's important, but yeah.
Okay. All right. It just wasn't, I did do a site inspection, so I'm not just relying on photos, and I did try to figure out where the property alignment or the boundary was. But no, okay. So that's enough information. Thank you.
Okay, no worries.
Thank you. No other questions, and I'll move on to the next item, which is item three. And I've got one speaker. It's Tim Cooper. Tim Cooper Chapman Planning. Thank you, Tim Cooper.
I'm representing the applicant. We obviously support council's recommendation for approval. Since there's no objectors, I don't really have much to say other than respond to any questions of the panel. I think
I'll just say then if the panel has any questions to ask you. Thank you. So, panel, do you have any questions of Mr. Cooper?
No, thank you, Chair.
None from me.
I have none.
You've got off very lightly, Mr. Cooper. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
We'll make a determination on your matter after the public side of the meeting is concluded.
Thank you. The matter's addressed in Council's assessment report.
Thank you. Item four, I have Grace Moses. Are you there, Grace? Is Grace in the gallery?
Hello. Yes.
Hello, Grace.
Hello.
There you are. Would you identify yourself for the record and then address the panel?
Yes, not a problem. My name is Grace. I'm from SLR Consulting, and I'm speaking on behalf of McDonald's this afternoon. I'm speaking in regard to the Hurlstone Park trading hours application. First of all, we are in support of Council's recommendation for approval with the 24-month trial period. With respect to the concerns raised within the submissions received for the operation, the Restore has not received any complaints in the past 5 years, including no noise complaints and no incidents in which have involved the New South Wales Police. This includes during the extended trade allowed under the COVID-19 ministerial order, which occurred for a period of 2 years, concluding in March 2023. During the extended trading hours, 80% of sales occurred via a delivery service and 20% of sales occurred through the drive-through. The amenity impacts resulting from this is therefore minimal, particularly regarding opportunity for noise impact and any social behaviour during the extended trade. As per the plan of management for the store, a litter patrol path is conducted 3 times per day to effectively manage litter in the area. The litter patrol path is along Griffith Street and extends to Hillcott Street and Queen Street. Patrol is not conducted along Canterbury Road due to safety concerns along the state significant road, and traffic volume is high. Given trade during the extended trading hours is predominantly drive-through and delivery only, an increase in waste generation is expected to be minimal, and existing waste collection procedures are considered to be satisfactory in the management of litter surrounding the store. This was proven during the extended COVID-19 trading hours, the informal trial period that occurred then. In addition, the noise impact assessment conducted for the site demonstrates that acoustic mitigation measures implemented, all relevant noise criteria is satisfied. As mentioned, no complaints have been received to the store in the past 5 years. In the event a complaint is received, the complaint is documented with all relevant details, including the date and time of the event, the incident that occurred, and how this is managed. The duty manager is then notified, and we will then review the register in the way in which the complaint was handled, and it will then be actioned accordingly within 24 hours of receiving the complaint. As I mentioned, we are in McDonald's is in support of Council's recommendations for approval, and that's all we have to say. If there's any questions or anything,
there will be some questions, but I'm just waiting to see whether the licensee would like to address the panel as well. I understand he's registered to speak. Mr. Linatus, are you there, sir? Do you want to say a few words, or are you just happy with what your plan has presented? You there, sir? Nick, do you know whether you're the licensee? I'm assuming he's a licensee for McDonald's, is he?
Yes, I believe he is online, but he's currently muted.
He'll need to unmute for us to hear it if he wishes to be heard. Maybe he doesn't. Any questions then of the planner panel?
I did have some questions that might be more appropriate for the operator or licensee, but if they're not on the call, then Grace, I might ask you.
Well, just before you do, let's see one more time whether the licensee is here. Are you there, sir? Nick Leonidas, are you there? I can't see him on our screen.
I can see his number there.
Looks like you're the catcher, Grace. Sylvia?
Sure, not a problem.
I've just got a couple of questions because you did actually, I perhaps anticipate what some of our questions might be. One of those was the patrol area. There was no information in the plan of management about actually what the patrol radius or the streets that a patrol might be. So thanks for covering that. You mentioned three sweeps a day. Given that the planner management identifies that those sweeps, I think, are about 11 a.m. It says after breakfast, 3 p.m. and at sunset. So there's three sweeps in pretty concentrated window. And the proposal is to operate 24 hours a day. Would there be a plan to increase the frequency of rubbish sweeps given the extended hours and the limited hours that you do the rubbish sweeps?
Do not believe so, just due to safety concerns during non-daylight hours if litter collection was to occur. The litter collection currently occurs after all the peak meal hours of the day. So I do not think that they would be looking to increase unless the panel wishes for an additional patrol to occur, but they, as I said, that it is satisfactory in collecting the litter in the area, and an additional patrol during the after extended trading hours at night wouldn't be necessary due to predominantly operations being via drive-through and delivery. There's not a large number of patrons on site. And actually leaving their car, so the increased litter is not of much of a concern.
Okay, it's a concern that's come through in the submissions, just in terms of, you know, rubbish being left behind, particularly I think at night, so after kind of daytime trading hours. So I think that that's, thanks for your response. I think that that's something that the panel can just consider further. The other question I had is, you set out a complaints type of process where the complaints are registered and there's a 24-hour window to do something. But what if you receive a complaint that needs immediate action, for example? Is there a process that, you know, someone that is responsible and how that might be addressed? So perhaps there's noise coming from the car park and one of your neighbours rings up.
Yes. As I am not the operator, I can't accurately describe what is actioned there. However, I do believe there is a store manager on site at all times who would conduct the safety protocols required to manage those kind of incidents. We do cover that in the plan of management and the crime risk assessment, I believe, to an extent, but in terms of the actual day-to-day, I can't unfortunately provide exact detail, but the store manager, I understand, do have protocols in place for the staff, and during nighttime hours, the staff that are on site are always senior and well-trained for any kind of incidents that could occur that could result in safety concerns.
Okay, thanks.
No problem.
Any other questions? If not, I'll move on to the next item. And I have Edward Walsh. Are you there, sir? Edward Walsh.
Good day.
Good day. Would you like to address the panel, sir? Please mention your name, just to identify yourself, and then say what you've got to say. You're an objector, sir.
I'm an objector. I live directly.
I think you've got a few things turned on in there that seem to be.
Yeah, we're just turning them off. I live directly across from the development. Hang on. No, so I'll just move away from the other speakers. Sorry about that. 2 seconds. I live directly across from the development, and my property is within the turning radius of the garage, proposed garage, and the turning radius as they exit onto Duncan Street. So that's one concern. The other concern is the safety of the lane. The lane is predominantly a pedestrian lane. We did some community surveys showing that we have up to an average of 10 people an hour using the lane, and pretty much zero traffic. During the recording period, we recorded zero car traffic, but 10 people an hour using the lane. So it's a pedestrian lane. Jaggers Lane is a historic Dunny Lane, very narrow. You can't pass, pedestrian and the car can't pass each other. So my two concerns are safety of people using the lane, and that includes the gates from the garden that back onto the Jaggers Lane. To get onto the lane, you can't do so safely if there's cars there. So there's the concern we have is that the garage has already been built. So the garage has a fully concreted backyard. There's a little bit of dirt spread over the concrete. So we need to see that removed. There's a fully functional garage door that needs to be removed. And the gutter, historical gutter, has been removed. So we're opposed. I think that's my key points. What we know is all the experts who have expertise in the area of traffic using the lane in terms of the codes, independent and council all say that vehicles can't use the lane. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Could I ask Bob Stevenson, please, to address the panel?
Mute. Yep. That's it. Good afternoon, Chair.
Good afternoon, panel.
Look, I've got just a number of things to add.
You just meant say your name for the record. Sorry. And then address
the panel. Can't hear. Just hang on.
If you just say your name and then address the panel, thank you.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
We can hear you, sir, yes.
Okay, fantastic. I can hear you.
I'm just asking you to say your name and then address the panel, if you'd be so kind.
Okay. My name is Bob Stevenson. I live at 33 Waterview Street, which is adjacent to the property under consideration. In principle, I'll just add a few things to what Ned has already said. The main thing here is an objection about private vehicle use of the lane. We actually went through all these issues 3 years ago when the original DA was considered. If I think about it, basically this has been a lane that's been in existence for about 140 years. It's been used as a pedestrian lane. It's part of a network of pedestrian activity for the community and for the residents. It's probably a key thing for me and the residents that live on Waterview Street is that on the south side of Waterview Street, we have no footpath. So in effect, the lane is our footpath, and that's where we access taking bins out, basically dealing with a lot of getting to and from Darling Street. In principle, the issue of using the lane gets down to the safety and amenity for not just the residents, but for the community. Second point I want to make is the non-compliance of the original DA consent. It's very clear that the off-street parking was refused at that time, so that's back in 21. If you look at it, the garage was to be deleted, that's been built. The car space was to be deleted, that's been built. The maximum gate width was 1.5 metres. The developer has implemented a 6 metre wide bifold gate. In addition, there's a 6 metre wide curb cut, which actually destroyed the original sandstone gutter of the laneway. So in summary, if you think about that, all the off-street parking infrastructure has already been built. It's all ready to go. My comment here is it would appear that this application is seeking to have the original conditions of consent overturned by the panel. It would also appear that there is a disconnect between the consent conditions of the panel and the certification process. Simply put, if the conditions were met by the developer, we wouldn't be having this meeting. The third thing I want to raise is that last year there was a proposal put to council to have the lane closed. Now, my question is to the panel, are they aware of that proposal? It's a question.
I'll take that on notice, sir.
Okay. So I'll just give you a brief summary of that. So back in June last year, there was a proposal put to council, which included all the councillors and the planning department and the traffic committee, to have the lane permanently closed, but to allow for pedestrian and cycle activity.
So I'm sorry, so you're answering your own question, are you?
No, I'm telling you, I'm giving you a summary of what it is.
Right. Thank you.
Is that all right?
That's absolutely fine.
It's important. Excuse me, Chair.
That is 3 minutes.
I interrupted this gentleman, so I'll let him finish. Thank you.
So just in summary, this is really important in terms of understanding the resident and community support to not have traffic in the lane. The proposal was supported by 47 community signatures. It's been endorsed by the local traffic committee. The council and the local traffic committee have run their own consultation process at the end of last year, and that resulted in a 75% support to close the lane. My understanding is the final proposal is being considered at the next council meeting. Not sure of that, but it's due. What this demonstrates is that there is a wider community support not to have cars or traffic in the lane, and that we can protect the pedestrian safety and amenity of the lane. So that's pretty much it. I hope that the panel will endorse or rather consider these objections and reinforce its recommendation from the previous original DA recommendation, which was not to approve any traffic off the lane.
And you've read the council officer's report?
I have.
And you're speaking in favour of it, are you?
In favour of?
In favour of the council
of the report. Correct. Yes.
Thank you.
I just need to add one thing. It's the issue.
Very
is,
quickly, if you would.
Yep. The issue is that the developer has simply ignored the conditions of consent and built the infrastructure for it.
Thank you.
So it's really a question of how, well, I think your the panel's conditions of consent were very clear, and it just hasn't been implemented.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, Chair, this is Claire. My apologies. Yes, Claire. We actually had another registered objector to speak for this item, but they were accidentally omitted from the list. It was Dorinda Hortle.
Sorry.
Yes, I'm here.
Sorry, to speak for or against?
To speak against an objector, the proposal.
Sorry. What's the lady's name?
Dorinda.
Dorinda, I will hear from you. Will you please address give your name to the panel and then address the panel accordingly? Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. My name is Dorinda Hortle and I reside at 8 Caroline Street, which is just at the northern end of the lane. I have 2 points that I'd like to reference. The first is relates to the historical significance of the Waterview precinct, of which 35 Waterview Street is part thereof. And it relates to the historic artefacts of the area, the sandstone guttering, which have been largely protected in the area. The sandstone guttering at the back of Jaggers Lane, in Jaggers Lane, at the back of 35 Waterview Street, has been removed and replaced with a cement gutter to support vehicle access. The removal of these significant stones comprises the only break in this continuous line of sandstone feature in this Victorian laneway. The heritage elements of Jaggers Lane, which one of the community referenced as being 140 years old, contribute significantly to the ambience and personality of Balmain. And I'd ask the council to consider protection of these artefacts for future generations. I'd like to reiterate concerns about the pedestrian safety in Balmain. As a member of the community, along with many other members in the community, we regularly use the laneway. I myself at least use it 4 times a day. There are little or no continuous footpaths around the area, and certainly none wide enough to support prams or young kids on bikes. Jaggers Lane is commonly used as a thoroughfare for residents, but also to note that many of the streets around Balmain, particularly around the Waterview Estate, are really suitable for one car, one way only, but most of them are two way, and it makes it impossible to use them as a pedestrian. So really, I just wanted to raise those two critical points.
Thank you, and we'll consider your comments in conjunction with the other comments at the end of the public presentation. The next speaker I have is Rory Steinley-Davey. See you there, sir. I believe you're a supporter. Mr. Steinley-Davey, are you there? What about Hugh Davies? Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Would you like to address the panel? Yes, I can hear you if you're not.
Hello. Yeah, you've got Rory and you've got Hugh. Can you hear us?
I can.
Rory, you're
doing a duet. Sorry, you just one of you at a time and perhaps one phone or whatever, you're just getting bounced back.
Yes.
So you're both proposing to address the panel?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Could I hear from Rory in the first instance? Could you please say your name to identify yourself?
My name's Rory.
Full name?
Steinley Davies.
Thank you.
I went to Balmain Primary School. I might be a relic like the sandstone curb.
Congratulations.
I just wanted to bring this back into context. It has gone to the Traffic Committee and it's gone to 2 council meetings. It's been deferred several times. And we're talking about the laneway. We're not talking about the development. And it's going to be challenged in the Land and Environment Court at the end of the month. I think it's clear to say that it is a roadway and a laneway used by vehicles. And it's actually the traffic report by council shows that 2.3 cars use the roadway per day, or 12 to 15 cars per week. I wanted to say this is not a DA, which would be a change of use or anything else. This is a modification to widen the gate. And I think that's for amenity and access. It's only 50 metres from the water. If you've got a kayak or you've got a dinghy or a boat that's on wheels, the 1.5 meters is completely inadequate to get a kayak in and anything else. And I think the applicant would be happy with a larger gate should this be 3 meters or anything else. So what I'm trying to do is take it out of this is not a DA, it's a modification. There's already a gate there. So whether or not it's 1.5 or 3 meters is purely a basic right, and it's for amenity and access to get things in. The applicant's a builder, so he likes to reuse materials and everything else, roof sheeting. So I just wanted to say that. I'd like to say to Brian Kirk, who's a panel member, that last time it was in front of the panel and everything else, it was said that a car couldn't get into the laneway. And now that council's done its traffic reports, I think that it's obvious that 15 cars are using it per week. And I don't think we should talk about the laneway. I think it's a simple modification. If safety is an issue and everything else, then that can be addressed with flashing lights. You can have sirens, you can have mirrors, the gate opens inwards. All I ask you to think about is the size of the gate. And I think at 1.5, I think why the modification has been lodged is to make it larger. And I think that the applicant has listened to the community and all of these things. It's not about the public land or anything else. It's just about making the gate larger.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Hugh Davies, do you want to address as well?
Yes, thank you. My name's Hugh Lloyd Davies. Thank you for listening to us. So originally there was a pre-DA, council advised a garage area could be approved. And on that basis, we went ahead and did the design. The DA was approved with the crossover. The crossover is within our property, and we have a survey to show that it's within our property. So as far as the issue that it's not built within the area, we have a survey for that. There are existing double gates in Jaegers Lane. Why we've been restricted to 1.5 may be something to do with the original DA, but it's got nothing to do with where we stand now. One of the ladies who was objecting, at the end of the road, she has a 4 meter garage, which she can drive in and out of. If you go to Clontarf House and go down Wallace Lane, it's a similar sized street. I think there's 4 or 5 garages in that street. So there's precedent within 300 meters of Jaegers Lane. The main issue I have is that I'm not sure why this condition was put on. Because as I understand, under the Roads Traffic Act, Section 6, right of access to public road by owners of adjoining land, right of access to public road is entitled as a right to access, whether by foot or vehicle or otherwise, across the boundary between the land and the public road. Now, that's a right. I'm not asking for a consent, and I'm not sure what the committee will think of that, but my feeling is that the condition you put on of 1.5 meters is onerous and unfair. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Just wait there for a moment. Any of the panel wish to ask either of these gentlemen a question?
No questions, but I will point out to Mr. Davies that Section 6 of the Roads Act does not provide for vehicular access, just access that can be limited to pedestrian access.
Sir, it's not a debate.
Okay,
thank you. Chair, question, is there one question before you go, gentlemen? Vanessa.
Hi, I just had a question about whether you still have the sandstone curbing.
The crossover is up to our property, and the curb is still there, yes.
Okay, so I just heard the concrete's been laid. Is it being laid over the stone?
There's concrete in various parts down the lane. It's not sandstone in places.
Oh, but I understand you pulled out some concrete to lay across.
There wasn't any sandstone there originally. There was a retaining wall that was there, I think, because it was all paved. The whole backyard was paved back in 2020. There was paving all the way up to the street level, and there was a retaining wall in there.
There was a brick retaining
wall. So there was no stone crossover? There was no stone curve?
No.
Okay, thank you.
No other questions, panel? Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for your presentation. We'll consider your submissions after we conclude the public side of the meeting. We'll make a determination this afternoon, and it'll be on the council's website in the next 24, 48 hours. So thank you.
Thank you.
Claire, are you there?
Yes, Chair.
Claire, would you exit the public gallery for us?
Yes.